All right, I'm glad to be here. It's the first time in Santa Barbara, hopefully not the last one. This hopefully will be a layman introduction to B2S plus and minus. I'll explain a little bit why people have been looking at this stuff for way too long. And why it is interesting now, because you know LHCb finally came with a huge amount of data, and Bell 2 will contribute a lot on the inclusive modes. And I'll spend a big part of this talk explaining a little bit the issues with the theoretical approaches. So where are some pitfalls and problems there are. The field, I must already tell you, is quite mature. So people have been talking about this stuff and thinking about all that could go wrong for a long time. OK, so why people have been starting to think about this stuff is that this flavor changing B2S transition is sensitive to a lot of extensions of the standard model. Historically, people, you know, the standard example, supersymmetric models. Now maybe supersymmetry is going out of favor a little bit. But there are many, many, many different kinds of models who contribute to these transitions. Since there are three-body final states, the two leptons can come in a variety of ways. So the kind of ways in which new physics enters is a little bit more complex than the way it enters in simpler processes like B2S photon transitions, stuff like this. So it's very interesting. Of course, together with these B2S transitions, there are the analog B2D transitions that are also very interesting, are sensitive to all different sets of flavor changing interactions. And they also will be studied mainly, well, already they started at LHCb and also at Bell 2. Okay, a lot of people have been working on this stuff, including people in this room. Okay, so let me just start by flashing the effective Hamiltonian that is responsible for these transitions. In the standard model, there are mainly 10, well, total of 18 operators, out of which only 4 usually play a biggest role in the sense that it is only new physics is assumed, or in most model of new physics, what you get contributions only to these 4 operators. These are magnetic moment or chromomagnetic moment operators. This is responsible for B2S photon transitions. This is a chromomagnetic operator. And these are called semi-leptonic operators in which there are 2 explicit leptons, of course. And these are the diagrams that contribute to this stuff in the standard model. This is all very, very well known. Okay. In extensions of the standard model, there are other operators that enter. And so this is what also people have been studying phenomenology forever. Every week there is a paper studying tensor contribution, pseudoscalar contributions, and so on and so forth. These are interesting because the standard model contributions to this stuff is always suppressed by small masses, whether it is the strange mass or lepton masses. So they are essentially zero given present experimental accuracy. So any evidence for any structure in these various asymmetries or things that can be ascribed to contributions of these operators is huge. OK, so now let me just show the typical spectrum of these processes so that we know what we are into. So what people usually do, for all of them, K, K star, XS, anything L plus, L minus, what people usually study is the Q square spectrum, where Q square is the invariant mass of the dilepton pair. When you plot this is what happens for the K star or the XS, so inclusive mode. What you find is, first of all, of course, this goes down at the end point of the spectrum. There is a pole here, a very low Q square, and this comes from the almost real photon pole. When Q square is very small, the dilepton are very close together, very small invariant mass. So this thing is dominated by B2 let's say K star, gamma star, with the gamma star going to leptons, and this explodes. This process is 2 orders of magnitude larger than this B2S LL transitions. Of course, this doesn't happen for the kaon mode because a B2K gamma doesn't exist for angular momentum conservation. And then another big feature of this that is a source of endless theoretical and experimental trouble is this huge peaks here. These are due to the J-psi or psi1s and psi prime or psi2s. And they are due to the fact that this process can go through this intermediate hadronic decay of the B meson with subsequent decay of the charmonium to dileptons. And one huge problem is that the branching ratio of charmonium into dilepton is only a few percents. For the J-psi, is about 5% into muons. For the psi prime, is maybe less than 1%, few per mils, and so on and so forth. These are effects of higher charmonium states. There are 4 extra charmonium states between the psi prime and the end point. These are much, much broader because they are above the open charm threshold, while the J psi and the psi prime are very thin. They have to go a weak decays. So how to deal with this is something that people have been grappling for many years. Let me just show you, flash a few formulas so you get a feeling for how these things are. This is for the inclusive. There are only 2 variables you can look, is the Q square and this cosine theta L, that is the angle between the dilepton systems and the incoming B direction in the dilepton system center of mass frame. As long as you neglect QED correction, QED radiation, the dependence on this on this angle is trivial. It is just one linear term and a cosine square term, and this is the standard notation for the coefficients of this these guys. This T and L corresponds to the refers to the polarization of the hadronic system. Here, I wanted just to point out one thing: is that this HT and HL, HT is much smaller than HL, and this is for a couple of reasons. Well, mainly accidental, and the fact is that you see this C7, that is the coefficient of the operator that contributes to BS gamma, is the coefficient of the S bar F sigma mu nu F mu nu B operator, happens to be negative in the standard model. And there is no reason for why this should be, so it turns out. While C9, that is the coefficient of the S bar B lepton-lepton operator, is positive and large. And they enter in these 2 combinations. You see, this is the transverse. This is the piece that contains the potentially real, almost real photon, transverse photon. So there is the 1 over Q square enhancement. So you see that the cancellation here, up here, is much stronger than the cancellation down here. So because of this, also there is an extra Q square over M squares in front, HT turns out to be much smaller than HL. This is partly accidental. If C7 was positive, that would be the opposite. And this will be very relevant later on, towards the end of the talk. But keep it in mind. OK, if you look at the K-star mode, things are more interesting. The K-star, as you well know on the lattice, is not a stable particle. It decays to K-pi. This means that you have many more angles that you can play with. You have not only this theta L that is the same as for the inclusive, but you also have this theta K star that is the same but defined for the K pi system. And then you have this angle in between the 2, I think, is called phi. So you write the most general decomposition of this quantity, and you find a gazillion observables. And those related by CP and isospin. And almost all of this stuff have been measured by LHCb. So it's incredible. Okay, they are doing amazing work over there. And maybe at the very end of the talk, if you still if you want to hear something, I can summarize a little bit, show you what the experimental status on this stuff is. But there's nothing changed in the last several months. For the Kaon, things are, of course, simple again, because the Kaon is stable. I mean, it doesn't decay right away, so it is actually identified. And so there are basically just three quantities. And this coefficient here actually turns out to be very small. So you go to zero with the mass of the lepton. The advantage of the Kaon mode is that it's much more accessible to lattice QCD, as you will hear from Ran maybe next week. I don't know exactly. All right, so let's now start talking about the theory. How do we calculate this stuff? OK, let's start with the one that apparently seems simpler, and it turns out to be a mess, but the inclusive mode. So in the inclusive mode, whenever you see, oh, I sum over every hadronic state, the first thing you think is an OPE, the same way in which you do for B2 charm and nu. The way it works, you have to look at the forward scattering amplitude, so B to B. In order to have two Bs, you need at least two insertions of these operators that I wrote, one B in each operators. And then you look at the imaginary part of this transition. This is just, for the moment, it's just electromagnetic current. I will have more to say about that in the next slide. And then the question is this a short distance? Is this controlled by short distance? So in other words, can I say that this thing is controlled by local matrix elements of local matrix elements of local operators involving the Bs? Or in other words, is it true that the imaginary part of this object is insensitive to long distance structures inside the B mesons, like for instance the shape function of the B meson? And the answer is, well, it depends. It depends on the Q square of the lepton. So you can do the simple exercise. We have Q going out and in at the operators. You write the invariant mass of the XS system, and you find this is always smaller than MB minus root of Q square square. So as long as Q square is not too large, this invariant mass is large, and you expect this OPE to be valid. Towards the end point of the spectrum, this fails, and so you expect and you find indeed that the OPE breaks down. That's fine. So I repeat, so the Q square controls whether these two points are close together and nothing else. So whether you can actually do something like that. This has been done at next to leading order on QCD. People have been calculating also the contributions at order here, lambda square over mb square. There are two operators, this is one of them, and lambda cube over mb cube. So a lot of work went into this to this calculation. Now there is a problem, and it is the charmonium. So if you look, if you take the spectrum that I showed you before, and you integrate everything, so you look at this this thing here, and you integrate under the red curve, what you find is something order 10 to the minus 4. While if you integrate what the OPE tells you, that is the black curve, you find something that is order 10 to the minus 6. So people have been really bothered by this for a long time. But I think that we kind of understand now what's going on, and is relatively simple. This was explained very nice in Chris talk, in paper some number of years ago now. And it is simply that if you write the optical theorem, what the optical theorem tells you, that the imaginary part of the forward scattering amplitude is the total rate, that is B2 XS, not XS plus and minus. So you start to be exclusive in the two leptons, you are throwing away a bunch of diagrams that happen to be very, very important. Because the J psi, the psi prime, they don't go dominantly to leptons. So you are throwing away stuff that is very important. So like for instance, this is one contribution that we do have. This is coming by taking here, say Q7, that is BS photon, and Q2, that is a BS charm operator. You try to close a loop with this involving two leptons, you end up with a diagram that looks like this. But of course, there are many other contributions where there is no leptons whatsoever. For instance, you can have O2 and O2 without any any lepton at all. So these are very huge diagrams. So if you did this, then the OPE would more or less work. But this is not what we are interested in, okay? So the question is really how to deal with this. Now, I wouldn't call this a violation of quark-hadron duality. It's simply that you are not really using the optical theorem correctly. You are throwing away stuff, so, okay. One point that is important, that maybe has not been appreciated enough in the literature, is that no matter what, even though here you are dominated by long-distance physics, you have J size that propagates and so on and so forth, the OPE itself, so this difference here between these two positions, is still controlled by the Q square. So a relatively small Q square, or for instance, even for Q square equal to the mass of the psi square, this OPE works. So this stuff is not sensitive to long distance physics inside the B meson, but it's sensitive to other kind of long distance physics. So this will enter, so this means that this OPE, this will have coefficients here that are controlled by long distance physics if you do things properly. That's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. Okay. So what people have been doing is to slice this Q-square spectrum, and so there are basically three regions for the inclusive people are considering. This is also, in a sense, applies for different reasons to exclusive modes as well, but I'll discuss this later on. So there is a very low Q-square region that conventionally is stopped around 6 GV square because you want to be far away from the J-psi peak, for which you do not really have a perturbative calculation. So you, when you are too close to the J psi, you are dominated by this long distance physics. You do not expect new physics in there, and you cannot even calculate it. So you lose information about the physics, short distance physics, that enters in this non-resonant curve here. So this is 6 GV square. If you go to too low Q square, so below 1 GV square, you have other issues. The fact is that you become dominated by B2 excess gamma that is measured in other ways, and so it's not so interesting. So you become basically controlled by this this operator only. So there is this 1 through 6 that is a little bit what people have conventionally agreed, and this is what experiments are measuring. And then there is the region above the psi prime. Now, the region above the psi prime has an additional problem that there are four additional very broad resonances there that one has to somehow deal with. How do people do this? They do the same way in which the G minus 2 hadronic contribution is taking into account. So you look at E plus, E minus into hadrons, particular harmonium. You reconstruct, you can reconstruct using the usual techniques, the full hadronic polarization, and then you make a leap of faith, and you pray that this contribution here, so in which you have a BS with this hadronic polarization here, captures the whole contribution. So you are assuming that color octet contributions to the production of the J psi in a B to S transition are actually small. Okay.
What's the name of this?
Well, I don't know if there is a name. The procedure, this procedure was for the first time presented by Kruger and then Segal. If you want, it's factorization. Okay, you are hoping that factorization works, or if you want. The J psi moves fast, the canon moves fast the other way, so gluon, these color transparency arguments. There is many people introduce this idea, so gluonic exchanges between two fast moving hadrons should be suppressed. No, what do you mean exactly? What are you?
It's a terminology. Yeah.
Well, I would say that neglecting gluons here is a factorization. I don't know if you... Yeah. And this was a kind of a tricky issue, because when you try to phenomenologically match these things, you find that you have to modify a little bit the weight with which this stuff enters. And for many years, people thought that, well, maybe these gluon exchanges are important, so people were a bit uneasy. But now, actually, I learned yesterday that if you use next-to-next leading order Wilson coefficient, I actually checked it. This kappa, this fudge factor, so are they called, that used to be around 2. For the inclusive, they go down by a factor of 2. So they actually are around 1. So this is actually good news for inclusive modes. So apparently, this color octet contributions are indeed suppressed. The one we use. The hard gluons. Yeah. Enough to fix this. Like this this thing here changes by a factor of 2 with respect to when this originally were calculated.
Perturbation theory?
Yeah, perturbation theory. No, it doesn't break down. Well, okay. From next to leading to next to next to leading, but it's a question of naming, or if you want leading to next to leading in this case, there is a factor of 2 in the, this C0 here is controlled by C1, C2, this current operators. And the effect there is large.
But is it a large one loop effect? Is it a running effect?
Well, I would say that there is a huge scale. There was a huge scale dependence early on, you know, in the C1, in this combination. And once you calculate the next order, you know, it gets reduced, and the central values shift within the scale. So there is nothing anomalous that happens. It's just that there was very huge uncertainties. That's right. You know, at the time, you know, this stuff. With a large uncertainty, plus or minus 1. Yeah, that's probably the correct. Is that MB? Yeah. For inclusive, we stop at MB, and then and that's it, because there's no other scale. Also, I must say that this story of the fudge factors, nobody talked about it for a long time. It says, whatever, you know, curiosity. Oh, yeah, factorization doesn't work for B2J psi excess. Surprise. Okay, so nobody was really worried about that. Of course, you know, when you start to take in seriously using the Kruger and Segal ansatz to correct, especially at IQ square, this becomes a more relevant issue, because it really tells you whether what you are doing the things you are dropping, you know, if they are very important, then this makes you a bit wary about your uncertainties. Well, yeah, you can check. That's what, you know, the reasons that now when you recalculate this, you find one is that, you know, you can, this is measured. No? All of this stuff is measured. The B2J psi excess inclusive is measured. But PDG is pretty accurate now. And also J psi k and the k star and the psi prime k. So all these modes of charged and neutral modes, everything has been measured. And then the calculation of this stuff in factorization is relatively trivial. So it's not a very difficult thing to. I mean, you can check. I mean, whether you are there could be new physics contributions there. I don't know if this is what you are hinting. So you know you. Well, you know, factorization has been studied everywhere, and in some places it works, and in some others, doesn't so much. You know, like B2 pi pi modes. You know, still, I think the jury is still a little bit out there. No, QCD factorization. Yeah. Well, there are also, as Gudrun was saying, you know, cancellations between these things. So this C0 is a certain particular linear combination of all the Swillson coefficients. And I really don't know what to say beyond this. I'm not aware of any particular problem with the maybe the convergence is not particularly fast, but is also not small. So the scale uncertainties now are not that large anymore when you vary the scales and in the next to leading order coefficients. That's okay.
It's a small number, and then you calculate more precise, and then it's still a small number, but it was a solution.
Okay. Some of these color octet contributions, it's just a side comment, have been studied in a lambda over MC expansion many years ago by Bucala, Isidori, and Ray, and they are included. They have very small effects. Okay, there is one more problem with the inclusive, and is okay. This is a nice. This is the spectrum. Okay, this is there is a phase space. So this is in Q square and invariant mass of the XS system. This is the kinematical constraint. Q square has to be smaller than MB minus MXS square. It's fine. This is the low Q square region. This is the high Q square region, colored. At high Q square, that's fine. Both Babar and Bell already are measuring the full excess phase space, whatever that means, because they don't really do full inclusive, they do sum over exclusive, so they have to use dark magic to reconstruct the full thing. But in the inclusive, in order to eliminate the double semileptonic background, so B to charm L nu with charm going to S L nu, they place cuts on this invariant mass of the XS system. That are pretty severe. And what has been done at the moment is that they reconstruct the full thing. So they present a number that is corrected for this effect. And the way they correct that is actually OK within the present experimental sensitivities is to use a famous model based on Fermi motion that Gudrun and Ahmed Ali did many years ago. I know this for certain because I spent some time at Babar, and I know exactly what Monte Carlo and what goes inside their Monte Carlos. And incidentally, these Monte Carlos, for the exclusive, are the same that are used at the LHCb. So there is one guy who wrote this Monte Carlos, and everybody in the experimental world is using the same. That is kind of scary if you think about it. Anyway, there has been a lot of talk in the last several years on how to improve on this. And there is this theory, it's called soft collinear effective theory, or Scott 1, that can be used to study effects of these cuts. So you are requesting essentially this MX to be a little bit small. And so the idea is that this object becomes something with large energy, if you want, virtual, but with large energy. And you can start an interaction of this object with soft stuff inside the B meson can be described in this soft collinear effective theory. So people have been studying this. And for instance, many nice results have come out of this. One in particular is that the effect of these cuts should be more or less universal, should be the same in B2S. LL transitions and B2U LU transitions. So if Bell 2 reaches, you know, with 50 inverse Atobarn, reaches enough accuracy, instead of just measuring this rate normalized to the total B2U rate or B2 charm rate, they could measure this rate normalized to the B2U semileptonic rate with the same cuts on the hadronic system. If you do this, one expects these effects to mostly drop, and so this could help reducing sensitivity over there.
Can you, for the GDU, In other words, is the blue box in a region where charm background is not global warming?
Oh, the double semi-leptonic?
No, not the double semi-leptonic. If you want to compare E to SLL and E to UL nu, you have to do the E to UL nu in a region where you don't have, where you aren't killed by charm background. Right?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm not sure. So the idea is to integrate over the same Q square range.
Right.
But I don't know the answer. I should check. I see what you mean.
Well, if it's inclusive charm, then it starts at n charm squared. So I think it's spurious, this blue box.
Okay.
So it should be below. You say that. Okay. I'll have to see. Okay. So the bottom line is that the modulus this issue of the cut on the hadronic system, low Q-square theory looks in good shape. At high Q-square, we have a problem that, as I was mentioning, is that the OP breaks down. Is expected, and this happens. And the way in this manifests itself is that the higher dimensional, so the power suppressed, contribution of power suppressed operators, you know, BB bar and so on and so forth, they become larger and larger. So this is just a manifestation of the breakdown of the OP. There are higher Chalmonian resonances that you have to integrate over. This is additional trouble. But some of this can be, and this results in as I will show you later on, some results, the theory uncertainties into this IQ square integrated branching ratio is still very large, okay, around 30%. But things improve dramatically if you normalize, again, with a B2U rate with the same Q square cut. And the reason is that most of the bad behavior of the OPE is identical between these two systems. And indeed, when you do this, you find that this ratio has a much better OPE than this quantity alone. This was proposed by Ligeti and friends. This is a very good idea. Again, it requires a super B factory to be implemented. All right. I will say a little bit more about inclusive later on, depending on how much time we have. Now, let's. So I think I summarized all the dirty stuff in the. All what in inclusive processes. So they are potentially conceptually very clean, but there are a lot of issues that one has to move around, you know, excess cuts, Chalmonian resonances, breakdown of the OPE at IQ square. Now let's go to exclusive modes. So now here the problem is much more controlled by long distance physics. So what we are after is matrix element between a B meson and the K or K star and lepton of matrix of an operator, each one of the operators that I wrote in the second or third slide. This, apart from some integration over the Q square and so on and so forth, is just the matrix element between a B and the K star or the T product of the operator I had with the electromagnetic current inserted some X, integrating over X. So this is exact, because I can always replace two leptons with the electromagnetic current on vacuum. Now, if this operator here contains an explicit lepton or a photon, like these three operators, this is trivial. This becomes just a form factor. You ask your lattice, I ask my lattice friends, they give me the form factor, we do phenomenology. Excellent. The problem is what happens for those operators in which there is no lepton. This then becomes a B2K or K star matrix element of a non-local complicated object. It's hopeless. Seems hopeless. Well, it's not so hopeless, because people over the years found a lot of ideas on how to do this. So the way this is resolved is completely different at low and high Q square. So let's start at very low Q square. So what happens at low Q square? So the two electrons, or the two muons, are very close together, very collinear, large energy, and the kaon recoils against this pair. So the kaon has a very large energy. So now there are three scales, if you look inside all the possible QCD diagrams that contribute to this process in this kinematical region. One is obviously the scale MB square, that is where, okay, of course. The other one is the scale lambda square, that is a lambda QCD square, that is perturbative, where non-perturbative effects actually settle in. And then there is an intermediate scale that is called, also called as hard collinear scale, that is still perturbative, okay, so this is between 1 and 2 GV, and that arises when fast-moving objects, so large energy quarks and gluons, interact with soft stuff inside the B meson. So if you take something that is soft, you know, the brown muck inside the B meson, and you hit it with something that has the typical momentum of this guy here, the result is something that has virtuality of this order of magnitude, and so in principle can be integrated out. Now, how to do this, it took many years to sort out, and the theory that does this is called soft collinear effective theory. It's not very simple, unfortunately, but it works. The result is that this complicated object, if this is in this particular kinematical configurations where these three scales appear, can be written as an overall Wilson coefficient that contains physics at scales mb square, plus two kind of contribution. One is a purely factorizable contribution, so it's a form factor that totally controlled by non-perturbative physics. You have to use lattice QCD, or in the past, some rules. And then there are non-factorizable pieces that are usually given, that are always given in this case, as a convolution of a perturbative kernel that is controlled by this kind of physics. So scale variations on these things will be larger because this is a lower scale, alpha s at this lower scale, times the Lycon wave functions of the D and the Kaon or the K star. The price to pay to have this wonderful expression, formal expression for this T product, is that you do not know, that you are neglecting contributions that are expected to be dynamically suppressed and be of the order of lambda QCD over MB. These are called power corrections. And it can be 10% or so on and so forth. And so the question, the size of these effects at low Q square is one of the biggest questions that we have in phenomenology now. Different people use different ansatz to estimate the size of these power corrections, and they also usually come to different conclusions. So, luckily, there is a lot of data. And these particular relations, I mean, they imply a lot. These formulas for the various operators, various observables, imply a lot of relations between different observables. And so maybe there is some hope that this can be actually tested experimentally. Yeah, it would be nicer if you can do. And at IQ square, you also came up with these ratios that are new physics insensitive, and that would be just a pure test of the theory. But I don't know if this can be done at low Q square. I don't know if, you know, a pure test of, like the FT F plus relation, you know, you don't even need to do measurements. You just calculate, you know, we have FT and F plus on the lattice, you calculate them, and then you see how well this works. And this is interesting stuff anyway. Okay, you might have noticed here I wrote sket 2, while when I discussed the inclusive, I wrote sket 1. So I just, maybe I just tell you what's going on, so if you hear in the future, you know what people are referring to. So these are all the modes that people have been considering below the scale mb square mb. So you have hard modes, so-called, in which all the energies are order mb, and the virtuality is mb square. This is the stuff that enters, for instance, inside this stuff, this Wilson coefficient here. Then there is this intermediate scale, and here there are soft and hard collinear modes. Hard collinear modes, in particular, have a perturbative virtuality but larger energy. So this is the kind of modes that describe the XS system, the hadronic system in inclusive modes after the cuts. Below that, there are ultra-soft and collinear modes. So ultra-soft have small momentum components, but also non-perturbative in body mass, like lambda square. And collinear modes are like you know, a pion or a kaon, so large energy and order lambda QCD mass. Now, the theory that describes hard collinear and ultra-soft, that is the theory required to describe inclusive processes, this is inside the B meson, this is inside the XS system, is called sket 1. Theory that describes collinear and ultra-soft, that is what you need for exclusive decays, is called sket 2. Now, you see that in sket 1, the virtualities of hard collinear and ultra-soft are separated parametrically. So this ratio goes to 0, this over this goes to 0 in the limit, and we go into infinity. This eventually results in the statement that everything factorizes in sket 1. Anything you write, whatever, boom, collinear part and the soft, ultra-soft part. So that's very good news for applications that only require these high hierarchies, like inclusive B2S lepton-lepton, or collider, you know, like high-energy collider applications, jet resummations, vetoes, and so on and so forth. For exclusive modes, the ultra-soft and collinear are the same particle boosted in different reference frames, okay? Same invariant mass, just the energy changes. This means that when you write a convolution like this, the idea here is that you then integrate over the complete wave functions, hoping that when this collinear mode becomes soft, when you integrate over its wave function, this overlap contribution vanishes. Okay, so this doesn't always happen, unfortunately. When this does happen, we say that there is a factorization theorem that guarantees, and this actually happens for B2K and K star lepton-lepton. But in some instances, this has been found not to work. So you write your nice convolutions, and then you do the integral, and this is infinite. And it doesn't mean that the matrix element is infinite. It means that you didn't manage to separate properly the degrees of freedom. So this problem, as far as I understand, is still a problem. Not that it's understood in different languages, like Ian Stewart and collaborators, they call it a zero-bin subtraction problem. Neubert, Beck and Hill, they call it an issue of the known decoupling of these messenger modes. But at the end of the day, they are saying the same things. There are some matrix elements that do not factorize, and that's the way it is. So this is an additional layer of complexity here. Anyway, you do this. where it works. And the kind of expression you find, for instance, for a B2K rate is something like this. So there are some pieces, form factors, F plus, FT. This come straight from the lattice for the K star 2. It's a bit harder. There are more form factors for the K star, and they are also harder to calculate on the lattice. And then there are these convolutions of these functions that can be fairly complicated, with B meson and kaon distribution, or K star light cone distribution functions. For these guys here, there is a Gegenbauer polynomial expansion that is somewhat rooted in theory. For phi b, there's nothing. The only thing we know about phi b is the first moment. We don't even really know it very well, but you know, is and that's about it. So this is a big source of systematic uncertainties.
Are you
Oh, well, luckily this stuff is way, way larger than this. That's why we have a fairly small uncertainties. This
is larger than the
than this second line here.
What about the last time?
The last one is also very large. But this is a
and large means that they're
this is a few
three times as big.
No. This stuff is a contribution is a few percent, 3-4%. Something like this. Depending on which mode. For the kaon I know because I just did the numerics Stanley effect. That's good. You know, if it was very large, it would be in a very bad shape. Of course, there is plus lambda QCD over MB, and then you know. Anyway.
Say
again. The.
You're saying the past press contributions.
Well.
Well,
it's 10%, but not on this, because the contribution of F plus, for instance, you know, if you stick it inside here, if you put say O9 here, this is exactly equal to F plus. So there's no power correction there; it's exact. Okay. Now the question is that inside this guy here is effective. There are other pieces that actually don't come straight from a BS lepton lepton, but they require some work in order to split out two leptons, but then it's still factorizable. It looks like proportional to F plus. So the way in a recent paper with Fermilab Milk, we try to estimate this stuff is to take every single contribution that appears here, that is not directly C7 times FT, C7 not effective, C7 times FT, C9 times F plus, and C10 times F plus, and we stick at 10% of that as uncertainty. I think this is a fair procedure, because really there is no power correction to C9 F plus. You know, it's just it's the way it is. There's nothing there. Oh. Oh, you don't. I mean, what do you mean you calculate it? So.
Where do you come from? You put them into your point.
Well,
so there are matrix elements.
Let's see how
it will.
Oh yes, and that's been.
He's calculating one class. How what's your last name? Paris or something like that.
That's for the light missiles, right? For the big.
The K and then for the
pioneer launch.
The B is the same.
Yeah, but there is no. Can you do on the lattice 5B the light cone wave function? So.
So. The first moment would be FB, so yeah.
The problem
is that the moment you really need is not a moment, it's an inverse moment, right? And that does not have, that can't be expressed as a local operator. So I think there are ideas in
Yeah,
it's just that those are proton, or pion.
This guy here also enters in B2 photon lepton neutrino process. It's a difficult process to measure, but if we had precise measurement of that quantity, maybe some information on lambda B could be extracted from there. There are more conceptually nothing. There are more form factors, and there are more complicated functions here.
Different.
But yeah, the oh yeah, that too. Okay. Now I'm eating all my time, so let's see if I can at least get through this. Okay, so this is what people do at low Q square, and this has been figured out a number of years ago. Originally, this was called like QCD factorization, or even earlier color transparency arguments, as Bjorkin and company. Now, at high Q square, the situation is different, in which you have a B that turns into a kaon sitting there in the limit of very, very high Q square, and the two leptons, they fly out. So here now the idea is to use a simple OP to calculate this this D product. The idea is that this thing here is controlled by 1 over Q square, or that is order 1 over MB square. So you should have, this guy here should have a short distance expansion. And the added bonus is that if this is really, you really write this as a short distance expansion, the leading contribution is just a B2K or K star matrix element of local operators that are form factors, up to higher corrections that can be maybe expressed in terms of more complicated form factors that are expected to be power suppressed. And this is...
Like two powers?
No, one power. It's only for inclusive that there is this theorem, what is called is a Luke theorem, yeah.
This is just one power suppression. Whenever there's a power suppression, it's accompanied by a factor of alpha s or a ratio of reason coefficient.
That's right. That's right.
So the power corrections are not the issue here. The power corrections are the main obstacle that flow to the spread.
Yeah. Yeah, that's no. It looks very, very nice. The only issue here is that you have this charmonium at IQ square, and the question is what to do with that. Now, here the issue is different than in the inclusive. Okay, in the inclusive, we do have an issue with the quark-hadron duality, but it's the standard problem. So you have a B2S, and this S, XS system means K, K pi, K with many pions, and so on and so forth. Each one of them is real, but then you say, well, okay, fine, I integrate over a long, big enough range, and this should average out. But this has nothing to do, okay, while the issue of the resonances has nothing to do with the OPE itself. The OPE stays short distance. I have another slide in which I show this. Here, the situation is a little bit different here, you see, because if you call, okay, for, let's say, if you have like an 0.07 contribution, you see you have a photon that moves. This is 1 over Q square, so it's a fairly low, short distance. So the distance, so this x minus y is completely local. In this case here, if you have actually propagating modes, like the higher resonances, there are 4 of these, actually this is not short distance anymore. So the kind of way you would deal with these higher resonances at IQ in the IQ square formulation is more like how you deal with them in E plus E minus into hadrons. So you really, your perturbative calculation has nothing really to do on the shape of the spectrum, because when you measure, you see all the resonances. But if you integrate over the whole Q square region, you expect this to work. Okay, so it's not a breakdown of the OPE, no more than there is a breakdown of the OPE for E plus E minus into hadrons. You simply have to calculate where this works, and then you can use dispersion relations, or you can invoke quark-hadron duality, and then you get your answer. Now, this has been studied most recently by Leahy, Bukala, and Feldman, and they found that in the models that they used to describe these resonances here, a very small effect between the continuum calculation, so the OP calculation, and the models of the resonances. The effect they found was around 2%, so very, very tiny effect. But again, I would like to stress that this is two completely different issues. Here, the quark-hadron duality issues are not really a problem and are in the S system, but this OPE is controlled by the Q square, while the resonances is a coefficient of this, local expansion. Here, instead, you have to have quark-hadron duality. You have to invoke quark-hadron duality to have a hope of somehow describing the resonances. Fortunately, we have a very smart colleague, is Roman Zwicky, with a student, I think, Leon. He actually used the model of resonances that I was describing earlier, so using the plus and minus into hadrons to reconstruct the polarization and so on and so forth, to compare what you obtain for the B2K lepton-lepton and the actual LHCb data. He even updated he used the most updated best result for E plus E minus into hadrons, and he found that somehow the peaks and the valleys are not quite in the same place. And so he concluded that for this process, somehow his conclusions are a little bit extreme. Okay, so he would say that quark-hadron duality doesn't work in this case, and so you can say nothing about the B2K lepton-lepton. This is might be a too extreme statement. What I would conclude out of this is that there seems to be a problem with factorization in B2 charmonium kaon processes, and it does find that these fudge factors that I was talking about earlier have to be order 2. In order to reconcile the shapes of the calculated versus observed distributions. And it is actually a funny thing that if you calculate these fudge factors with updated short distance coefficients for the K-star and the XS modes, you find that they are around 1, but for the kaon, and I did this exercise yesterday, it persists. So it's still using the updated coefficients of order 2. So it might be, but this we don't understand why, that there is a problem in the factorization in this process here, but not in the K-star or for the inclusive. And this is open, I'm getting interested in doing right now, to see exactly how this and why this might be.
Yeah?
Well, yeah, so what Beilich and Bukala did is they did somehow similar to what Roman did, but without assuming factorization. They just used some Schiffman model. I don't remember exactly all the details. Schiffman models to model resonances, and they compared the result of an OPE, that is a more or less straight line, straight smooth curve, with the fluctuation on top of it. And they find by varying the parameter models that there was no much change as long as you integrate over the whole Q square region. But of course, local quark-hadron duality doesn't work here. This is in square root of Q square. So basically, from here, this is the psi prime, the psi 2s. Let's say from about here, from where there is data actually, from here to here. Yeah. That is something that you expect you have to do because you know that you are in this situation. So it's not like a surprise that you cannot describe.
So you're higher than now, but you're talking about the region of the above threshold.
That's right. Yeah.
And so the reconciliation between the curve and the Biot-Kukala Feldman statement is that if we integrate it by I,
yeah. Yeah, this is true, but there is also something more, is that in producing this curve, you have to assume that factorization works for this guy here. So there is a little bit more theory assumption in Roman's calculation. All right, so I'm running out of time here. Yeah, but okay. Well, I'll try to go more quickly, just to flash. There are just basically two topics I want to talk about, well, one mainly. One is a more recent progress on inclusive B2S lepton-lepton with regard to photon radiation. This is also something that had been talked about in reference to the LHCb issues, you know, K to EE versus K to mu mu, impact of photons, describe photons, and all of that. So let me quickly say how things are. Okay, I won't go through everything on the slides because it's too much material. Just let me focus on one thing. So we were at some point getting, for many reasons, interested in seeing what happens when you include real and virtual photonic radiation to B2S plus and minus inclusive processes. Now, there are well-known theorems, like KLN theorem tells you that if you calculate virtual and real, and you regularize, for instance, everything in dim reg, but you don't need to do that, and then you integrate over the whole spectrum, you should find that there is no divergence, and this is true. Fact is that this is true only after integrating over Q square. If you are differential in the Q square spectrum, this is not true. So there are infrared divergent collinear contributions. Now, these are not really divergences because there are explicit logs of the lepton mass over some scale. That's fine. It's like Compton scattering, a very, you know, this is old stuff. What is amusing is that if you calculate this correction and you look how it moves, you find that it is large and positive below 6 GV squared. That is accidentally the point that people chose. And then it's large and negative in the IQ square region. So this is somehow accidentally shaped in a way to have maximal effect. Now, this effect doesn't need to be true, like in experiment, but what this is telling you is that one has to be very careful what you do with photons.
So
this is these are really stemming from new contributions from processes like B2XS photon lepton-lepton, when the photons are kind of collinear with the leptons. There are similar contributions when the photon is collinear with a strange system, but this is another story. So the main point already here, one realizes that one has to be a little bit careful. And so we had spent like a long time trying to extract from people at Babar and Bell exactly what they do, because they weren't aware that this was an issue. So they were very in the papers, they didn't say anything. And even when we talked to them, it was kind of hard to sort out exactly what they do with photons, because they have a lot of photons. Some photons are emitted in the detector and reconstruction, and so on and so forth. Anyway, the bottom line is the following. So what theoretically one really would define as inclusive is that everything goes into X, including all photons. Whether this is true experimentally is a different issue. What we gathered from this conversation with many people, both at Babar and Bell, is that essentially what they do is that almost all photons go into X, but very few of them, the ones that are harder than 30 MeV or 20, depending on Babar and Bell, and are emitted in a certain cone around the lepton directions, which are put back into the electrons. For muons, they don't do. For muons, they don't do this. So they don't even look for photons. There are very few photons emitted for muons. What this means is that after we are done calculating this, and this already has a very large log, so we have to use Monte Carlos to calculate the difference between what we calculate and what they measure. And I actually did this. It took a long time. And the shift, a low Q squared is very small, it's only a couple of percentages between what we calculate and what they measure for electrons. And high Q squared is larger. So this, when Bell 2 will get there, I mean, what they have to do is to fly me over to KEK, and then I tell them exactly what I have to do. Well, seriously, I'm the only person who did the analytic part and also the Monte Carlo part. So I can really help them. No, you don't need, but you need to validate. I'll show you in a second. It was a very fun thing. So first of all, let me show you that this stuff is amazingly large. So this what you do with this photon changes your observable in an amazing way. So like black curves are QCD plus QED, and dashed curves are QED only. So this HT plus HL is the branching ratio. Let's say this is just the low Q square, but similar things happen at high Q square. So the net effect is fairly small, in line with what we would expect. There's about 5% shift. And then if you remember, I told you at the very beginning that there was this funny anomalous suppression of HT with respect to HL. You see, this is in QCD, HT is much lower than HL. HT plus HL is the branching ratio. So it happens that QED radiation, these QED effects, decrease HL and increase HT. The sum of these two shifts have to reproduce the 5%, so there are two larger shifts, and the larger of the two happens to be on HT. Bottom line is that these effects are 100% on HT. And it was like, when we saw this, you know, we stopped and it was just panic, and you know, we did everything wrong. And so we didn't find any mistake, and then to convince ourselves we were not doing something completely unreasonable, I actually simulate some 100 millions, or actually even more, BS lepton events at Babara. I spent a month at Slack. I used their Monte Carlo with photos and everything, and I tried to see if I could see these effects in the way they simulate events, and they are there. So one has to be very careful. Let me just show you. This is very nice. So we like to talk about inclusive quark-hadron duality, but for them, it's not like this. The way they construct this, these samples is that they have a sample of kaons, a sample of k-stars, and then they have a continuum that in EVT-GEN, that is their Monte Carlo, is modeled using Gudrun and Ali's old paper from 20 years ago, I don't know, some long time ago. That is still okay. They use this stuff only for shapes, okay? Then they put them together. They weight the relative contributions using the most recent experimental information they have on these integrals. So it's a bit approximated. And this is how they build the spectrum that goes all the way to the endpoint. This is an important point, is that at the very endpoint, there is only K star and kaon, of course. It becomes totally exclusive. After they're done simulating this stuff, they throw the events through photos, and photos add photons. They reshuffle the events and adds any number of photons. This is also what we did, so there are lots of events with many, many photons. The most energetic photon can be energetic, you know, up to a GeV. Now, if you boost this to LHCb, this means that they have photons with, you know, 50, 60 GeV that are emitted by this stuff here. This is just 1 GeV because at Babar and Bell, the center of mass energy is almost zero. It's just slightly asymmetric. It's few GeV. Okay, so after we got this, we had the privilege, theoretical privilege, of simulating with and without emission of photons, and so we could check how the shape of the distributions changed. This is how theoretical calculation was, and this is the corresponding results from Monte Carlo, and they look almost identical. So you see, for instance, here the suppression of HT with respect to HL in the Monte Carlo, and the shift with QED radiation. Actually, the you know, the QED radiation increases HT, decreases HL, and when you actually calculate the size of the effect, you find very similar numbers. Not exactly the same, because the way this QED radiation works, it really shifts events all over the spectrum, it reshuffles the events. So you are very sensitive to the shape of the spectrum that was very approximated to start with in the Monte Carlo. So it's kind of tricky business. You see the point?
What's the difference between those two plots?
Oh, this one? This is a zoomed version of this. This is the whole thing. Because, you know. Yeah, this goes the whole thing. It's kind of a nice plot. Anyway. And even this famous plot actually looks very similar. But it is all jagged, you know, something horrible happens at IQ square. But you know, this is just to tell you that, you know, this stuff is there, is in their events, is in their Monte Carlos, so they have to be very careful how they do these measurements. There are some pluses, is that this messes up the structure or the final state, so now we don't have only a polynomial of second order in this cosine theta lepton, but we have actually a complicated analytic formulas in this z is the cosine theta lepton, I didn't write it. And so it is possible to define new observables that are projections of this stuff. We define them using Legendre polynomials, but you can do in other ways. And the interesting things is that these new observables have a different Wilson, the dependence on Wilson coefficients than the standard with forward-backward symmetry or transverse and longitudinal fractions. So it's kind of interesting. The only problem is that this is pure QED effects, so are small, are difficult to measure. But they can still do something there. This is just to give you a feeling for how precise we are at the moment. Low Q square over the whole region, we are looking about between 5 and 7%. Six and 7%, depending mu on for various observable, the branching ratio where it is here it is 5%. And at IQ square, you see, is about 30%. The reason that this is so large is that the OPE is breaking down, so most of this uncertainty is power corrections. You find that, you know, lambda cube over mb cube are large effects, so you are very generous in assigning uncertainty, and you find this huge, huge numbers. During this Edinburgh workshop several months ago, the question came up on whether this kind of effects could be responsible for this huge ratio of electron to muon in the kaon. It's called RK. And the answer is apparently not. And this is because of the way LHCb people guys did this measurement. So they tried very hard to take every single photon that comes out of the lepton or the electrons and stick it back into the electrons. They, of course, cannot do this exactly, but using photos, they put everything back in. So they really, you know, you got to believe in photos. And the reason, we heard a talk last week, you know, the reasons they believe they can do this right is that they can see the J-psi reconstructed. So they do it for the J-psi electron, a plus, a minus, photon, it disappears. You don't even see it in the Delitzsch plot. They use photos to bring it back, and you form the nice J-psi peak. So they are very confident that this actually works for there. I am confident that they can do it for the J-psi, but my point is that the way photos work, you know, it needs to know about the whole spectrum of the B2K lepton-lepton in order to reshuffle the stuff. And if the Monte Carlo is not accurate in the spectrum, some stuff might happen. I don't know. I was very happy to hear that they are planning to use a totally data-driven approach to reconstruct the photos. I'm not exactly sure how they do this, but they think they can do it in the short term, so without, you know, relying on Monte Carlos too much. For the time being, this RK ratio is not due, as far as we understand, is not due to QED effects. Yeah, 25%. No, they could be that large, but they're not. Like, you know, if I calculate the same ratio for the inclusive, I add it in the previous slides. There you go. It can easily be 75% in some. For the branching ratio 1 to 6 is only 3%, but there are other observables for which this can be large. These are pure QED effects. There's no new physics, okay? But this stuff is not there apparently for the LHCb measurement. as far as we understand. But first line is HT. Is a place where the QED effects are very large to start with. That's why you find a huge. Yeah. No, but it is a place where the QED, these logs are large. It's anomalously large somehow. In the branching ratio, is only 3%. That is what you expect. Okay, it's a small effect. Ah. It is because these effects come from the leptons spitting out the photon. And so when you do something like this, an event that originally was a high Q-square event, it becomes low Q-square, or vice versa, depending how they are emitted. So if you take one away at high Q-square, you have to find it somewhere else, because the KLN theorem tells you that the total integral has to be zero. So it's a zero-sum game, so to say. OK, the last thing here is, I already mentioned it, that at IQ square we have a problem with the OPE, but if you normalize to the B2U with the same Q square cut, things get better. How much better? Much, much better. You see, you get to a 10% total uncertainty, and the biggest error on this is CKM, because you are dividing by VUB that we don't know very well. So if you don't consider this a theoretical uncertainty, because you're actually measuring VUB through this, you are looking at very, very under control OP. So this is this is how the future of IQ square, I believe, measurements will be done at Bell. And maybe I can show you just a couple of plots. This is how experimentally we are looking. So we don't have that much measurements yet, so we have just a 20% measurement of the inclusive. There is this funny thing that Babar uses the full data set, 424 inverse femtobar, and Bell has 711 on tape, but the update was only with 140. So they can, it would be very interesting to see what they would, they have like almost five times as much data and they don't tell us what the numbers are. I don't know why. Anyway, if you put this on a plane, so you extract constraints on this Wilson coefficients out of these measurements, there is also a measurement of the forward backward asymmetry inclusive. It's very preliminary, very large errors. And you look at the overlap of everything. The black area here is what it is allowed. It's still a very large region. Outside of these two curves is what is allowed by the forward backward measurements. And OK, so there is a lot of room. This yellow area here is what Bell 2 can do, what we believe now that Bell 2 can do. But invariantly, they can do always better than what we believe they can do, because they learn. They always beat the naive statistics at B factor. So they're very, very good. Standard model is the dot here. So it's fine with the uncertainties at the moment. One sigma things are, they vary too much. So it's not worth to plot the one sigma bound. These are all two sigma, OK? Two sigma is everything is fine. OK, so this is actually breakdown of what Bell 2 can do. So it's the same plots in which the small yellow contour is the big red one here. Just to see how things go, it's not so. These two are these extra observables that exists only because of QED radiation. So you see that they're not very much constraining, but they have a difference dependence on the Wilson coefficients. So if there is some fun in your physics, you might use this stuff as extra constraints. And then the last interesting thing I wanted to show is, maybe if you really want, I can show the summary of the experimental tensions in B2K star. But if you take seriously all the asymmetries measures in the B2K star lepton-lepton, what you find is that you require some actually fairly large sized contributions to Wilson coefficients C9 and or C10. So if you take the central values of the present fits and you extrapolate to what Bell 2 can do, you find this center here. OK, this is just central value. And this is the standard model prediction for the inclusive. This is a plot in the B2S mu mu inclusive, B2S mu mu at low and IQ square. So you see that actually, if these tensions persist and they are true, this is something that you can actually see at Bell 2. Now, the time frame for Bell 2, I don't know from now on with tsunami and nuclear explosions, reaction troubles. So it shouldn't be too far in the future. I don't know if you know a better schedule, 4 or 5 years. I don't know. Anyway.
We'll find out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So that's very promising. Of course, you see this 1, 2, 3 sigma means that there is still a lot of room for this fit to fluctuate around. And so it will be very interesting to see the new incarnations of these constraints from LHCb. Yeah, it's you take.
And the black point is that the central body doesn't change, but the air is shrinking.
Well, okay. So these contours are just the contours in the inclusive plane of the exclusive anomalies.
So
today. And this instead is that you pick a point anywhere in this contour and you say, how well can Bell 2 measure that? And this is that well. So, you know, it's still very possible that there is nothing, okay? But if the tensions stay where they are, well, this is a level of tension that is testable through inclusive. So that's the message here. So this is very large effects in a sense. What do you mean? Well, yeah, I'm not exactly sure how Tobias Hurt calculated this uncertainty. It is simply that it is harder to measure forward-backward asymmetry than it is to measure branching ratios. Also, it depends on the value, the central value, you know. Okay, so this is a little bit, and if you want, I can show you the tensions. Maybe I can leave you the one slide that is the LHCb. Yeah, there you go. This is what drives. This P5 prime is defined in a funny way. See, I have the definition somewhere. It's related to some coefficient of some particular projections in these angles, and then is normalized to some other stuff. And the reasons that people choose this definition, I think this was Joachim Matthias who invented this stuff, is in this way some hadronic uncertainties drop out in the ratio, and they are a little bit more precise. So they pushed for this, they measured this, and they found that this, about a 3.7, almost 4 sigma effect, and this is what got many people excited. If you try to fit this in order to bring the standard model prediction down here, you need very large contributions to Wilson coefficients. Large means supersymmetry, MSSM with minimal flavor violation is impossible. So you need extra sources of flavor large. So it's not a small thing. It's a serious new physics. Of course, people have analyzed this. This is the kind of regions that they find in the C9, C10, or C9, C9 prime plane. And they also had looked at the Q-square dependence of this correction. This is from a talk of Wolfgang. And there seems to be some Q-square dependence in the fit result. These are one coefficient fit. So people have been saying that maybe if you do a two coefficient fit, you do not see a Q-square dependence. Maybe. So this, according to some people, is a hint that maybe this is some hadronic effect that they are seeing, because if this was a true contribution to a Wilson coefficient, it would be completely flat in Q-square. It's just a shift in the coefficient. But I think it's still early to conclude about this. Much more data is coming, and we'll see. We can leave it here. Thanks.